You are on the next level. This is The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com, where the expression is still free.
20 seconds and counting. Ignition sequence start.
And you're very welcome. This is The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. Thanks for joining me. We're going to take a look at Barry Satoru, also known as Barack Obama, and these days also known as OILSOC, O-I-L-S-O-C, which is Obama is a lying sack of shit. That's what that stands for, folks. It stands for that for good reason. Because, as everyone has now found out, Obama is a lying sack of shit. Lots of hopey but no changey, as they say. Same shit but different flies. Yeah. I mean, the only hope and change you're going to get out of this guy is that, you know, by this stage you hope you're going to have enough change left to buy yourself a cup of coffee after these guys are finished fucking you over, led by Barack Obama, Barry Satoru. And we'll be taking a close look at Barry. But first, I'd like to play you a little clip from George W. Bush speaking recently. At least, I think it's George W. Bush. See what you think. Certainly saying all the George W. Bush stuff. Here's George W. Bush speaking about troop deployments, increased troop deployments to Afghanistan.
The insurgency in Afghanistan didn't just happen overnight, and we won't defeat it overnight. This will not be quick nor easy. But we must never forget, this is not a war of choice. This is a war of necessity. Those who attacked America on 9/11 are plotting to do so again. If left unchecked, the Taliban insurgency will mean an even larger safe haven from which Al-Qaeda would plot to kill more Americans. So this is not only a war worth fighting, this is fundamental to the defense of our people.
Oh, what a mix-up. George Bush left one of his old speeches on that teleprompter. Barack just accidentally read it. Let's have a closer listen to that, because I don't know if you know, but there's a neuro-linguistic programming expert who says that Barack Obama, in his teleprompter campaign speeches, is using techniques of neuro-linguistic programming, techniques of subliminal insertion of key phrases and words accompanied by gestures, etc., which are, to him, hallmarks of classic neuro-linguistic programming technique, designed to convince people of stuff without their knowledge, designed to affect their perception of the message in ways that are beneath the conscious mind. Could that be going on? That sounds like a conspiracy theory. Let's have a listen again to, well, it turns out it's Barack Obama there, talking about Al-Qaeda and the threat and the need for troops in Afghanistan. Let's have a listen to him again and just listen to how that was phrased. Maybe something slipped by you there.
This will not be quick nor easy. But we must never forget, this is not a war of choice. This is a war of necessity. But we must never forget.
Hey, wasn't that the catchphrase for the 9/11 event? Didn't he just slip in something which was an emotional trigger into that speech, casually, but yet with a significant pause before and after to make sure it sinks in to your subconscious? Take a listen to it again.
Overnight. This will not be quick nor easy. But we must never forget, this is not a war of choice. This is a war of necessity.
There you go, folks. That's how it's done. See, you don't just say, but we must never forget this is not a war of choice, it's a war of necessity. See, it just slips by you then when you say it doesn't have any impact. You got to do it with the pause, folks. But we must never forget this is not a war. And so you get the old we must never forget phrase embedded in your subconscious, while he's making seemingly a completely different point. Interesting, isn't it, folks, what's going on? and what's been going on. No, Obama's speeches are very cleverly written. Anyhow, we'll press on here, because we're not here to poke into the authorship of Obama's speeches. We're here to talk about Obama's relationship with the CIA and also the CIA's relationship with the KGB. You'll notice there's an awful lot of hysteria going on in the right wing at the moment about Barack Obama. A lot of it is justified. I'm talking about the right wing media now, with Fox News leading the charge.
Phil Kirpin is here. He is the director of policy at Americans for Prosperity. Phil, how are you? Good to see you. Jeff Jones is an interesting character. Jeff Jones is the founder of the Weather Underground, right?
That's correct.
What else has he done?
Well, Jeff has been involved not just in those terrorist activities with the Weather Underground. He was actually part of the Weather Bureau, modeled on the Politburo, which was the high leadership where he was with Bill Ayers. But Jones was on the run, hiding from the law for about a decade before he was finally caught in a dramatic raid where his four-year-old child saw him arrested in 1981.
The Movement for a Democratic Society, what is that?
That is a reconstituted version of the old Students for a Democratic Society, which was the parent organization of the Weather Underground. These were the 1960s radicals who wanted a revolution to overthrow the country.
Communists.
They are, Glenn. And actually, the most frightening part about this is that these guys are not, for the most part, the public face of everything they're trying to do. They've got the mainstream guys. Carl Pope, the president of the Sierra Club, is on the board of the Apollo Alliance. They've got Leo Gerard from the International Steelworkers Union on the board of the Apollo Alliance. John Podesta from the Center for American Progress. All of the mainstream elements of the Obama administration and the liberal or progressive movement are tied in with these people.
Tied in. Great. He claimed that he was a Marxist. He listened to Marxist professors. He was a radical and blah, 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 blah. But he was very young. When did he ever stand up and say, I reject Marxist principles? He'll laugh about it. I reject Marxist principles. I reject these people. Marxists. I reject them.
And I'm not going to join in that hysteria. I don't want to get you mad at Barack Obama. Barack Obama is just a front man. So the objective is not to get you to lose your cool. The objective is to help you and motivate you to get even with the people who put Barack Obama where he is and who dictate his agenda. So just be careful of all that stuff, folks, because the objective here is divide and conquer. The objective here is to sensationalize the issues about Barack Obama around commies. Quite a narrow focus. What they're not talking about on Fox News, which we're talking about here, and I doubt they'll be talking about it in 9 months' time on Fox, is Barack Obama's relationship with the CIA. Now, I'm not here to say that Barack Obama is a CIA agent, but I am here to say that if Barack Obama isn't a CIA agent, I'll eat my hat and shit it out as gold coins. No, I'm here to say that there is a pattern of connections and activities which make it highly likely that whether or not Barack Obama was an actual recruited agent of the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States, that he was certainly acting as an asset for that agency. And I think we'll establish that beyond reasonable doubt. The information about Barack Obama and the sensitive issues of his connections with CIA have been coming out here and there in scattered droplets on the internet ever since the inauguration, and some of the material has been in the public domain for many years. But let's just put all the dots together and draw the picture. Recently, this scattered information came to some prominence when the Australian journalist John Pilger referred to a particular phase in Barack Obama's life where he worked for a certain organization. I'll let John Pilger pick up the story.
In his book, Dreams from My Father, Obama refers to the job he took after he graduated from Columbia in 1983. He describes his employer as, and I quote, a consulting house to multinational corporations, unquote. For some reason, he doesn't say who his employer was or what he did there. The employer was Business International Corporation, which has a long history of providing cover for the CIA with covert action and infiltrating unions and the left. I know this because it was especially active in my own country, Australia. Obama doesn't say what he did at Business International, and there may be absolutely nothing sinister, but it seems worthy of inquiry and debate as a clue to perhaps who the man is.
Doesn't it just? Well worth inquiry. John Pilger's not pulling that out of his ass about Business International Corporation being an on-the-record CIA front organization, because it's on the record. Let's quote from the New York Times. Hey, it doesn't get more on the record than that, folks, about Obama and Business International Corporation. On the 30th of October 2007, Janny Scott wrote an article in the New York Times entitled "Obama's Account of New York Years Often Differs from What Others Say." That article begins, "Barack Obama doesn't say much about his years in New York City," and it goes on to identify a company he worked for as Business International Corporation. Now, the article is interesting, and we're going to quote some stuff out of that article. But what's also interesting is that Janny Scott, writing in the New York Times in 2007, failed to mention something else that's on the record in the New York Times about that Business International Corporation, which is described as a consulting firm. You see, when journalists write articles, particularly ones in the New York Times, they usually do a search of the newspaper's archive itself in order to see what other information is in there in the New York Times on the record in previous articles about the company. But Janny Scott never mentioned previous information from 1977. So it was back in 1977 that Business International Corporation was identified as a CIA front. And it was identified as such in the New York Times on the 27th of December 1977, 10 years earlier, in an article entitled "CIA Established Many Links to Journalists in the US and Abroad," it was reported that the company had provided cover for four CIA employees in various countries between 1955 and 1960. And I find the omission of that piece of information puzzling when reading the article in the New York Times 10 years later about Barack Obama's sojourn as an employee of that company. The thrust of Janny Scott's article is that Barack Obama has painted a picture of himself as, well, just a kid from the wrong side of the tracks by virtue of his skin color, automatically from the wrong side of the tracks, telling a tale in dreams of my father of, quoting from the article, under heated sublets, a night spent in an alley, a dead neighbor on the landing. From the fire escape, he and an unnamed roommate watch white people from the better neighborhoods bring their dogs to defecate on the block. Janny goes on, he takes a job in an unidentified consulting house to multinational corporations, where he is, quote, a spy behind enemy lines, startled to find himself with a secretary, a suit, and money in the bank. That was an unfortunate choice of phrase, Barack, in your book, describing yourself as a spy behind enemy lines while working for Business International Corporation. What you were trying to say was that you were just this kid from the wrong side of the tracks, an out-of-towner, and then suddenly you found yourself with a job, with a suit, with money in the bank and a secretary and working for a corporation. And yes, indeed, he was a spy behind enemy lines, says Barack Obama, speaking of his time with Business International Corporation. Dan Armstrong, who worked with Obama at Business International Corporation, says that that tale of the secretary in the suit is pure fabrication, that most people, in fact, dressed down at the company, and that only the vice president in charge of Obama's division within which he worked had a secretary. Obama was a researcher in a low-key and informal operation which was staffed mainly by young people. Now, Business International Corporation, an interesting firm, it published a newsletter, it did research, and had about 250 employees worldwide. And they assisted companies with foreign operations, reported the New York Times. In other words, multinationals, assisted them to understand overseas markets. The firm was later taken over and purchased by the Economist Intelligence Unit, which is part of the Economist magazine, which is virtually a mouthpiece for the Council on Foreign Relations, by the way. But that was Business International Corporation. And as you heard John Pilger say there, he has experience of the company as an operation which was involved in the infiltration of the left in Australia. So infiltrating leftist organisations, union organisations, etc. in Australia. The British journal The Lobster magazine has also reported on these issues, that Business International was active during the 1980s when Obama was a member of the company, promoting the candidacy of Washington-favored candidates in Australia and in Fiji. In 1987, indeed, the CIA overthrew the government of Fiji after about a month in office because it wanted the island to be a nuclear-free zone, meaning that American ships could not call in to Fiji to make port calls. And there was a coup. After the Fiji coup, the candidate, which had been supported by Business International, reported the Lobster, who was much more amenable to the Washington agenda, was reinstated to power. At this point, it's worth taking a deep breath and realizing that, you know, the activities of the CIA, in large measure, are focused on supporting the operations of multinational US corporations abroad, making sure they don't have labor problems, making sure they have political structures that are amenable to their agendas, etc., etc. Not so much of the spying stuff, and a lot more in terms of the business intelligence stuff. And coincidentally, that's exactly the kind of business that Business International Corporation was in, helping multinationals to operate in foreign markets. So there's an interesting overlap between the aims and objectives and activities of the CIA and of Business International Corporation. You could, I think, reasonably portray Business International Corporation as an ideal starting place for an upwardly mobile young CIA officer. Not that I'm saying Obama was one, but it certainly would be the kind of place where you would start off your career, or alternatively, if you were an asset, where you would be deployed in order to, as Obama likes to say, make yourself useful. We're not finished with Business International Corporation yet. We'll come back to them because there's a kicker, and it's a hell of a kicker, in that Business International Corporation story. But that was in 1984 that he began working for them. Not 83 when he graduated from Columbia. He would have graduated from Columbia in May-June of 1983. But his employment with Business International did not commence until early 1984. So there's a gap of about 6 months there, during which time we don't know what he was doing. However, let's turn to some other activities of Barack Obama as a young man, as a rising young star. He made himself useful in a funny way in 1981, and possibly again in either 82 or 83. But certainly around 1981, he travelled to Pakistan. That's quite interesting because Pakistan at the time was, you know, on the banned list. Pakistan was a haven of terrorism even at that time. Terrorism which had been orchestrated and instigated, by the way, by none other than Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's currently an advisor to Barack Obama. But back at the time of Obama's involvement in Colombia, Zbigniew Brzezinski taught at Colombia. And while at Colombia, Barack Obama was one of eight students chosen by Zbigniew Brzezinski to study Sovietology. That was between 1981 and 1983. But even before being selected by Brzezinski, he had already visited Pakistan, where, even as he was visiting, the CIA was in the process of building the Al-Qaeda organization to target the Russians, who was to prove to be a very useful organization in the long term, and not just for targeting Russians. But it seems to me, from analysis of the timeline, that it's likely that in the summer of 1981, before he actually began in Colombia, or shortly thereafter, and when this relationship with Brzezinski in Colombia was ongoing, that Barack Obama visited Pakistan, most likely under an Indonesian passport of Barry Sotoro, because showing up with a US passport mightn't have been the smart thing to do. Don Frederick on colony14.net has taken a look at this Pakistan trip or trips issue, and he points out that due to the political situation in Pakistan, which was under martial law, Mujahideen fighters were moving back and forth between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and it wasn't a place to visit, and they didn't really like non-Muslims visiting the country unless they had good reason to do so. And Don points out, quote, "The simple truth is no young American would have reason to or be able to visit Pakistan in 1981 unless he was on official government business of which the State Department was aware. Assuming the young Barack Obama was not on governmental business, he had no business in Pakistan." Don Frederick writes that one of Obama's hosts when in Pakistan was Muhammadian Mian Sumro, who was 11 years older than Barack Obama, the son of a Pakistani politician and himself a politician. Indeed, he became interim president of Pakistan when President Musharraf resigned recently in August 2008. Quite an interesting character, and someone to whom he was introduced reportedly by someone in the US embassy in Pakistan. Don Frederick also reports that somewhere along the line, not while in Pakistan, Obama also became acquainted with Khalid al-Mansur, advisor to Prince al-Walid bin Talal of Saudi Arabia. It was al-Mansur who would later contact Percy Sutton, who was an attorney for Malcolm X, asking Sutton to write a letter of recommendation to help get Obama into Harvard Law School, by the way. And it is nice, isn't it, to have some well-connected Saudis lobbying on your behalf and making sure that you get into Harvard Law School. I bring that up because it's slightly relevant because, of course, in addition to CIA operational support, Saudi money was also heavily involved in the creation of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And, of course, I sort of bring it up as well because the majority of the alleged 9/11 hijackers were from not Afghanistan, not Pakistan, but, yes, Saudi Arabia. So, that's 1981 to 1984. Barack Obama popping over to Pakistan to hobnob with well-connected politicians, developing friendly relations with well-connected Saudi Arabians, and working with an organization which is on the record as being a CIA front. Before we move on, let's just move back a little first. Move back and take a look at some of the background to this, especially that of Anne Durham, Obama's mother. Interesting character, Anne Durham. I refer again to Don Frederick's article on colony14.net. Adding to the mix, he wrote, is the fact that Anne Durham, Obama's mother, had visited at least 13 countries in her lifetime and had worked for companies that required travel to Pakistan. Her employers appear to have included the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, the Ford Foundation, Women's World Bank, and the Asian Development Bank. Note that USAID and the Ford Foundation have, allegedly, been used as covers for CIA agents. As a consultant for the Asian Development Bank, Durham frequently needed to work in Pakistan on an agricultural development program. She reportedly lived on and off at the Hilton International Hotel in Lahore. When Barack Obama visited Pakistan, he stayed at that same hotel. There are even suspicious individuals out there who think that Barack Obama's mother, Anne Durham, has a career path and a range of activities which also match the profile of an intelligence asset. One charged with, well, infiltrating the left is one way of putting it. Another way of putting it would be being the left, I suppose. Not just infiltrating it. The sort of thing that has them worried about that is stuff like the career path we just described, and also the fact that Anne Durham was supposedly a leftist, and yet she married Lolo Sotero, who was a link man between US oil companies and the Indonesian dictator Suharto, who had been installed by the CIA in what was a rather nasty coup. That's an interesting marital choice. In 1967, Anne Durham married Lolo Sotero. Sotero had worked for the Indonesian army as a geologist, and then he became, as I say, a link man, a consultant for the Indonesian government for their relationship with Mobil Oil. Indeed, there are people also, suspicious people, who wonder what the connection between Barack Hussein Obama Sr. and the US government was. Barack Hussein Obama Sr. studied at Harvard, like his son, and became a senior economist in the government of Kenya. Who knows? But with the right kind of family background, it wouldn't be surprising that someone would end up either being an agent or an asset of the CIA by dint not of accident or choice, but simply family background. We'll take a little pause for music. I think it's time for a change. This is The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com with Fintan Dunn. I'll be right back.
We are piecing together what has been a violent reaction to the apparent re-election of Iran's hardline president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. As night fell in Tehran, fires were reportedly still burning
after supporters of a rival, more moderate candidate clashed with police in the streets.
Why the deception? Why the deflection of questions that we ask? Why hide your reflection? Cause ain't nothing pretty about the truth you conceal. But the time has arrived for the youth to reveal what's behind the curtain. You'll find for certain 30 years of oppression intertwined with hurting. But they'll never stop the heartbeat of spirited men. Revolution called once, now we hear it again. Cause the rule of the tyrants is nearing an end. And better days for our children will appear in the bend of a long road travel to the hour at hand. Hold your heads up high, fight the power and stand. Because it's time for a change. No more silence, no more corruption, no more violence, no more excuses. It's time to stand up and take what is rightfully yours. Now man up, because it's time for a change. No more silence, no more corruption, no more violence, no more excuses. It's time to stand up and take what is rightfully yours. Now man up. We casted the ballots with our choice supplied, only to find that the sound of our voice did not, betraying our trust jaded. Soon as the dust faded, we took it to the streets, broken hearted and frustrated. Sport in the green while supporting a dream to force the government into a board in the scheme of oppressing the views of a new generation, desiring a change who pursue renovation. Death to the dictator to the very last. One of them dies, that's what our whole diaspora cries. Time for us to expose every last of the lies we've been fed and instead start casting a that we've had since 79. Break the cycle and prove that these threats that they make a trifle. There's a wrong going on and it's time to right it. From LA to Tehran, we gon' shine united. Because it's time for a change. No more silence, no more corruption, no more violence, no more excuses. It's time to stand up and take what is rightfully yours. Now man up, cause it's time for a change. Change.
And you're very welcome back. This is The Beautiful Truth on Break for News with Fintan Dunn. Okay, let's continue our examination of Barry Satoru, Barack Obama. Before we go on with his career, let's remind ourselves of something that's already in the public domain in a big way, especially on the right of the political spectrum, and that is Barack Obama's work as a community organizer. I've already dealt with these issues back in September 2008. That's Students for a Democratic Society, Bill Ayers, the Weathermen. All that ground has been heavily explored by the right of the political spectrum and scorned and laughed at by the left. That examination of those activities takes them on face value. The picture that's presented to you is of a young guy who gets enamoured with Marxist ideology and has really never put that love affair with Marxism in the past, and still hangs out with and has close associations and links with all of these radical Marxist groups. As if that's the entire story, that America should not be run by somebody who's a goddamn commie. My examination of these issues goes a lot deeper than that. It's not merely a question of throwing communist as an allegation at Barack Obama, but it's an examination of Barack Obama's career path and how it fits into the classic profile of an agent whose job it is to be involved in such politics on behalf of the state. So bearing in mind his links, as I say, with those Students for a Democratic Society, New Party, etc., let's take a look at where he went following his graduation from Columbia in 1983, working first for Business International Corporation, a CIA front. He then moved on to work for a non-profit group, quoting again from the New York Times article, in October 2007. After about a year, he was hired by New York Public Interest Research Group, a non-profit organization that promotes consumer, environmental, and government reform. He became a full-time organizer at City College in Harlem, paid slightly less than $10,000 a year to mobilize student volunteers. Mr. Obama says he spent 3 months trying to convince minority students at City College about the importance of recycling, a description that surprised some former colleagues. They said that more bread and butter issues like mass transit, higher education, tuition, financial aid were more likely the emphasis at City College. So Obama's job required winning over students on the political left who would normally disdain a group which, and a public interest research group, was an offshoot of Ralph Nader's. So an organization which was inspired by Ralph Nader was really a sort of a wet liberal kind of an organization, not a hardcore leftist group, and interested in recycling and not redistribution of income and decent tuition support and financial aid for students and all the real hot button issues. Nevertheless, Barack Obama bravely worked away trying to persuade left students to join the organization, as well as students on the right who were not active at all. It was indeed a perfect training ground for someone who was to become a full-time community organizer, using the Alinsky method of community organization, by the way, and I've covered that in the previous audio about this topic. That's the one in September 2008, the Red Coup Gambit. You can search for that on breakfornews.com. This is the kind of background that I think sheds light on Barack Obama. It's not one issue of where he worked at any one time, but the sequence he goes through and the potential connections of all of this to the profile of an individual who is professionally involved in politics on behalf of the state. But which state? The United States or the USSR? No, I'm kidding. You see, what I'm getting at here is that, you know, it is our opinion that, in fact, the KGB, Russia, Vladimir Putin, is working hand in hand with the International New World Order. So that, in fact, there is a unity of purpose between the activities of the KGB and the activities of the CIA, DIA, and NSA. That it's all one big happy family. I don't know if you remember that story came out during the Bush era, that Yevgeny Primakov and Alexander Karpov had been hired as consultants to the Office of Information Awareness. Primakov is former Prime Minister of the Soviet Union. Primakov was a Middle Eastern correspondent for Pravda, and he had the KGB codename Maxim, M-A-K-S-I-M. And it was Primakov who negotiated the Cold War settlement following the collapse of the USSR with Javier Solana of NATO. So, as I say, perhaps you're aware of that story about Primakov and also General Alexander Karpov working for the Office of Information Awareness. Whether that's true or not, and it does seem to be borne out, but what I'm pointing to in all this is our analysis indicates that that entire so-called collapse of the Soviet Union, which you'll notice is not actually collapsed, was orchestrated, that it was part of the expansion of the European Union. The entire EU project was spearheaded by Bill Donovan, and Google that and the word CIA. So that all of this was about providing an outlet for the expansion of the European Union into Eastern Europe. And so the collapse of the Berlin Wall, etc., the fall of communism, wasn't actually a fall of communism at all. All that was an intelligence operation. And in fact, in the final analysis, we are in the process of the construction of a new world order, with the East and West working on their respective ends of that new world order, having their respective spheres of influence, but working towards a final objective. So it's in that context that you need to look at the activities of Barack Obama as he moves from the visits to Pakistan around the time of Al-Qaeda, the involvement with Brzezinski, into Business International Corporation, into student organization, and then into connections with student, militant, radical organizations, and all the time not just working on an agenda to infiltrate these organizations on behalf of the CIA, but in fact a much deeper story where this penetration of both left and right is part of the modus operandi of the intelligence organizations which dominate the structures of the USSR and the United States in particular. That's a much deeper story than a surface story about some guy having either Marxist associations, which he should no longer have, being a goddamn commie, or any of the rest of it. That turns it, all of it, into a story of a new world order plan to destabilize the United States, to destabilize it at a cultural level, at an economic level, which you're witnessing, at a political level, and that Barack Obama has been a state asset in that plan ever since he was old enough to wear long trousers. See, there's no question that when you examine Students for a Democratic Society and all of the other radical organizations, you do find links back to International Communist Party KGB sponsored organizational structures. There's no arguing with that. And there's no arguing with the fact that Barack Obama plugged into those organizations, was deeply involved in those organizations in his early political career. What I'm saying is that at the same time as he has that profile with these organizations which are connected back to KGB, that he also has this CIA-type profile which emerges out of his connections through Business International Corporation and his connection with Zbigniew Brzezinski and all of that good stuff and the background of his mother, etc., etc. So that you have two intelligence organizations here which are active in the United States. And they each have their reporting structures. And in terms of the loyalties of individuals, individuals may believe that they're loyal to a socialist ideal or to an ideal which is aimed at protecting Americanism, in other words, the right agenda, but that all of this political activity is deeply penetrated by both intelligence agencies. And now I'd like to play you an edited extract from that audio back about 5 or 6 weeks before Barack Obama won the election in 2008. And in it you'll hear from Yuri Bezmianov. You can listen to the whole audio. It's a long one. Maybe you think it's worth it. Check it out if you have the interest. It's called The Red Coup Gambit. And you'll find it in the forum on breakfornews.com or just Google that and the word Break for News to find that full audio. But here's extract highlights. This is a KGB defector, Yuri Bezmianov. And he's talking about the modus operandi of the KGB. So, I'd like you to listen to that. And as you do so, have in mind that this modus operandi is not just a KGB or modus operandi, but the destabilization, demoralization, crisis, destruction agenda is being unleashed on the United States by two intelligence agencies which are active in the United States. And that the MO they're following is the MO which you'll hear outlined by Yuri Bezmianov. And you'll also hear a little about Obama's background and connections to these Marxist organizations. And I'd like you to look at all of that in the context of Barack Obama fitting in to a game plan which, though it is driven by two separate and supposedly opposed intelligence operations, is, in the final analysis, coordinated in a chess game which is being played by the New World Order. Take a listen to this, and I'll be back. Beautiful. Take a look at what somebody was saying back in 1984, and that somebody is Mr. Yuri Bezmianov. He's a KGB agent who defected to the West. And I'm just going to play a brief clip in introduction from an interview conducted with Yuri Bezmianov, in which he spoke about tactics which are deployed by the KGB. Tactics including Aktimli Meripiacha, active measures, Aktimli Meripiacha. Active measures being, I suppose we'd know them better in these days, as psychological warfare. And he speaks to that issue. Of course, KGB and New World Order have merged. As you know, we're dealing with an intelligence operation which is using psychological warfare, and that intelligence operation is based in the intelligence services of the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, and Russia. So it's all one big happy intelligence family. But the warning which Yuri gave to us all back in 1984, well, have a listen to it and see if it sort of echoes current events.
This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all these schmucks to bring the country to crisis, to promise people all kind of goodies and the paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C., who will promise lots of things, never mind whether the promises are fulfillable or not. Never mind. He will create false illusions that the situation is under control. Situation is not under control. Situation is disgustingly out of control.
The very structure which he's talking about, KGB structure, is now part of the New World Order. And so you have to reinterpret his comments every time he mentions the KGB and the Soviet system, reinterpret that and realize that, hey, this guy is actually referring to something which is part of the New World Order. Let's pick up the story with Yuri Bezmenov again as he discusses the issue of the various stages of the destruction of a nation. There are four, and the first of those is demoralization.
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. First one being demoralization. It's Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. The process of demoralization is complete and irreversible.
Some of this stuff must sound, you know, almost anachronistic. I mean, this talk of Marxist-Leninism and KGB, God, that's from some other era, isn't it? After all, the Berlin Wall fell and, you know, communism was defeated, wasn't it? Except, of course, that one of the principal trading partners of the United States and the place where the Olympics has just been held is China, which is, well, a totalitarian communist country. Well, it's sort of communist and yet capitalist. And maybe, in fact, what we're seeing is that just as much as capitalists have gone into business with the communist Chinese, perhaps communism is about to go into business with the American capitalist system. Could that be what's happening? Let's go back to Yuri Bezmenov and his description of the other stages in the destruction of a nation. Those stages are, first, demoralization, followed by destabilization, crisis, and normalization. As he goes through this, you might just see if you can pick out any correlations with current events in the United States. So, after demoralization comes...
The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption. Whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, it doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, what matters is essentials: economy, foreign relations, defense systems. The influence of Marxist-Leninist ideas in the United States is absolutely fantastic. I could never believe it 14 years ago when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power, structure, and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely. Normalization is a cynical expression borrowed from Soviet propaganda. When the Soviet tanks moved into Czechoslovakia in 68, Comrade Brezhnev said, "Now the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia is normalized." This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all these schmucks to bring the country to crisis, to promise people all kind of goodies and the paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C., who will promise lots of things, never mind whether the promises are fulfillable or not. Never mind. He will create false illusions that the situation is under control. Situation is not under control. Situation is disgustingly out of control. Most of the American politicians, media, and educational system trains another generation of people who think they are living at a peacetime. False. The United States is in a state of war, undeclared total war against the basic principles and the foundations of this system. The time bomb is ticking with every second. This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
Let's track right back to a period in Obama's life which he described in Dreams of My Father. This is 1971 to 79 when he was in Hawaii. And in that book, he describes a very close relationship, almost like the relationship between a son and a father, that he had with someone called Frank, a poet. And he repeatedly refers to Frank without actually detailing who Frank is. There's been some research done on that, and we now know exactly who Frank was and what kind of a background Frank had, and possibly the kind of influence he might have had over a young Barack Obama. Here's an extract from an interview with Cliff Kincaid of USASurvival.org and Herb Rummerstein. I'll make no further comment because I think they address all the issues clearly enough. Here you go.
Let me turn it over to Herb, because he can fill you in on the details about who Frank Marshall Davis was, how he was a hardcore member of the party, and the kind of network that he was part of in Hawaii.
Well, Davis was a very interesting character. He'd been a Communist Party member in Chicago, and then was sent by the party to Hawaii, actually by Harry Bridges, the head of the Longshoremen's Union, who was a secret Communist Party member. And he arrived there in, I guess, about 1950, and became a writer for the Communist Party newspaper in Hawaii, a newspaper that was funded by Harry Bridges' union. Well, we had the report of the Communist International in Moscow through the American Communist Party, ordering them to go into Hawaii because there was a major military base there, of course, Pearl Harbor. And this was before Pearl Harbor. They began bringing communists into Hawaii to undermine the American system there. And Frank Marshall Davis was one of those communist colonizers. Now we can't really blame Barack Obama for Frank Marshall Davis. It was Barack Obama's grandfather that brought him to Davis to be his mentor, to be a black father figure for him.
You know, it would be one thing if Obama had come into contact with Davis and had written about him openly and honestly in his 1995 book, Dreams from My Father. If he had said, "Yeah, my grandfather introduced me to this crazy communist, this anti-American figure, Frank Marshall Davis, and I listened to him, but, you know, politely, out of courtesy, but boy, was he crazy. I rejected what he said." But that's not how Obama handled it. Instead, he repeats this advice that he's given by Davis and covers up Davis's real identity by just referring to him as this mysterious Frank. And as I said earlier, Vic, it's only when this blogger in New Zealand found the Gerald Horn speech referring to Frank as Frank Marshall Davis that we started putting the pieces of this puzzle together. And what makes it even more Significant is, of course, as and this is why we have two reports, one on Hawaii, one on Chicago, is that Obama doesn't give up or reject these kinds of people along his career path in his life. Instead, what happens? He leaves Hawaii, goes to college, where he admits in his book he picks Marxist professors among his friends, he goes to socialist conferences, then he comes to Chicago, where he goes to this church featuring the anti-American preacher Jeremiah Wright, and launches his political career in the arms of communist terrorists Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, formerly of the Weather Underground terrorist group, and we find out some other people there had communist and socialist connections as well. So here we've got Barack Obama right in the middle of two significant communist networks, one in Hawaii, one in Chicago, and that's what our reports are all about. And we simply provide the information and let the people make up their minds. Is this all an accident? Is it just a coincidence?
Okay, if we have the working assumption that the power structures of the old Soviet Union, guided by the devious hands of the KGB, if they were in fact always working at one with the aims and objectives of Western capitalism, despite being its apparent enemy, then there's a global structure here. This left-wing organizational structure competes against a right-wing organizational structure, and that left-right divide is used by the establishment behind the scenes in order to guide the entire system towards its final predetermined goal. So it doesn't matter which system is used, it's power at work. So on the one hand, you may use evangelical preachers and TV evangelists as your organizational structure for organizing the right into a system which can be used for power. And on the other hand, you can use the Democratic Students of America, New Party, and all the other neo-Marxist organizations on the so-called progressive left of American politics. You can use those to similarly organize another cohort of people, once again, for political power. Saul Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals in 1971, is the political mentor of Barack Obama. And it's interesting to note that, in fact, Hillary Rodham Clinton wrote her thesis on that book and Alinsky's theories of social change as her thesis in Wellesley College. So both Clinton and Obama are familiar with Alinsky. Now, Alinsky is hardcore Marxist. Obama taught the Alinsky method for years in workshops, and that was his community organization. I'm going to read you some quotations now from Rules for Radicals from Saul Alinsky, just to give you a flavor of the guy whose methods Barack Obama was teaching in workshops. Here's a quote. "In this book, we're concerned with how to create mass organizations to seize power and give it to the people. A Marxist," he wrote, "begins with his prime truth that all evils are caused by the exploitation of the proletariat by the capitalists. From this, he logically proceeds to the revolution to end capitalism, then into the third stage of reorganization into a new social order of the dictatorship of the proletariat, and finally the last stage, the political paradise of communism." Let's continue with Alinsky. "From the moment the organizer enters a community, he lives, dreams only one thing, and that is to build the mass power base of what he calls the army. The end is what you want. The means is how you get it," writes Alinsky. And here he's at his most evil, I think is the word.
"That's what they do. They try to bamboozle you. Hoodwink you. Try to hoodwink you. Hoodwink you. Try to hoodwink you.
You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok. This is what he does."
South Carolina, I do believe he's the one. Barack Obama!
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor.
I am not asking anybody to take a chance on me. I'm asking you to take a chance on your own aspirations.
I'm not just asking you to take a chance on me. I'm also asking you to take a chance on your own aspirations. Try to hoodwink you.
You've been took.
They try to bamboozle you.
Bamboozle. Let us stray.
And I believe that out of what will be seen as the greatest restructuring of the global economy, a new world order was created.
And there you go. Okay. Maybe all of that is not enough to convince you. You see it's all there, but you're not 100% sure. You can see the case can be made for the role that Barack Obama, KGB, CIA are playing in the New World Order. But let me connect some final dots for you. Remember I said there was a kicker in the story about Barack Obama working for Business International Corporation, CIA front? Yeah, there is a kicker, and it's a hell of a kicker, and it ties it all together. Because believe it or not, Business International Corporation had close links with Students for a Democratic Society. The CIA front had close links with the Marxist Radical Organization. Those links seem to have been developed by Business International. Let me outline them. Jim Lindgren reports this on Volokh.com, V-O-L-O-K-H. And if you want to get any of the references to this stuff that I've talked about in the audio, just go to the forum post on the Break for News forum that's connected with this audio, and I'll list you the links there. You can go and check all this stuff out yourself. But here's Jim Lindgren writing about this relationship between Obama's first full-time employer and the Students for a Democratic Society movement that was to subsequently, many years later, following his graduation from Harvard, that was to subsequently spearhead his political career. Jim Lindgren writes, Business International appears to have had closer ties to the Students for a Democratic Society than any other American business firm. I learned this when I had occasion to read Carl Oglesby's memoir of his days as a leader of the SDS in the 60s, Ravens in the Storm, a personal history of the 1960s anti-war movement. Oglesby, who was president of SDS in 1966 and 67, led the largely non-violent wing of the group in its battle with violent revolutionary wing, which became the Weathermen. The SDS had three national secretaries. Two of those were Bernadine Dorn and Mike Klonsky, who was close to Dorn. Dorn and Klonsky led an attack on Oglesby, who had a more liberal, less hardcore radical vision. And it was through Oglesby that Eldridge Haynes of Business International Corporation was making the contacts. There were many meetings between the Oglesby wing of Students for a Democratic Society and Business International Corporation, with many individuals involved in Business International Corporation over a course of many meetings, over a course of many years. Indeed, there are reports that Business International Corporation offered to fund some of the activities, protest activities and other activities such as those of Students for a Democratic Society. Now, as a side note, let me just remind you, and I've covered this before, that the Weathermen did eventually split off and do their own highly violent revolutionary activity. And that's in the public domain, well in the public domain, and Bill Ayer's role in that is in the public domain. Of course, Bill Ayer's never ended up doing jail time for his terrorist activities, because the government blew its case due to an illegal wiretap, which handed the perfect pretext to the defense to have the entire case thrown out. Was that incompetence, or was it a case that if I had an agent, Bill Ayers, who was acting as an agent provocateur, acting as a political agent, I'd make sure, if I was the US government, that I blew the case against Bill Ayers so that he never served jail time. Anyhow, if all of this means what I think it means, and maybe you're coming to believe it means, then it means that the United States is in deep trouble, and it means that the political structures of the United States are being heavily manipulated by intelligence agencies, both domestic and foreign. And that probably means that this is an audio that you need to circulate to friends so that they get clued in to what's going on. It also means that it's a time for us all to be very careful of provocation, to be very careful of thinking with our asses and not our heads. This is not a time, as I said at the outset of this audio, to get mad at Barack Obama. Screw that. It's not a time to get mad at anything. This is a time to get as strategic and tactical and calm as those who are orchestrating the events you see going down all around you. Because if you don't, you'll be divided and conquered. Because that's the game plan. That is the most vital message I'd like to come out of this, is the need for people in the United States to come together and to transcend existing political divisions and narrow interpretations of what's going on. Let me lay some foundation for that. There, I'd like to play an extract from the Richard Green Show on Air America. Richard Green's not hosting it, someone's standing in. But this is Air America, which is progressive, hardcore, leftist radio station, Air America. And you've got callers calling in about the healthcare issue, and I'd like you to take a listen to one of those calls. You'll also hear some extracts from Obama campaign stump speeches. So take a listen to this now, remembering that this is progressive left talking, and they're catching on to what's going on. This guy is, for sure. He's going to say something here in the course of this extract where he says, I'm going to say something now that I think will light up your lines. And then he says it. And it's the most important comment that's been made on talk radio that I've ever heard in all of the talk radio I've ever listened to. So when he says, I'm going to say something that's going to light up your lines, you have a listen to what this progressive leftist is saying. Okay, this stuff is good anyway because it's got the it's got great stuff about Obama's treachery on the health issue. The sort of stuff that isn't making it into the hysteria that's been whipped up by the media, pro and anti. But anyway, take a listen to this, and as I say, watch out for that light up your lines comment at the end. Here goes.
It required an investigative reporter from the LA Times to discover that there were secret meetings, secret negotiations by Barack Obama's people with the big drug companies, and they had a deal that there'd be an $80 billion chop in the charges by the drug companies, and it was a deal in secret. Billy Towson, the guy that Barack Obama, during the campaign, said, this guy's a creep, we won't deal with him, that was the guy that they shook hands with. And when I say shook hands, that ain't metaphorical. It was a backroom deal.
Then we'll tell the pharmaceutical companies, thanks, but no thanks for overpriced drugs. Drugs that cost twice as much here as they do in Europe and Canada and Mexico.
First of all, it makes me puke that we've just been chaineyed by a guy named Barack Obama, who said he would never do this. It would be on C-SPAN, and it wasn't on C-SPAN. And rather than fess up and say, I did the wrong thing, I had a secret negotiation, even with the guy he said he would never talk to, Billy Towson,
We're going to do all these negotiations on C-SPAN. So the American people will be able to watch these negotiations.
He's such a charming liar, though.
In the next 10 years, according to the Obama administration's own figures, we will spend $3.6 trillion on prescription drugs. $80 billion off $3.6 trillion is 2.2%. 2%, Mr. Obama. I'm wondering, I'm going to say something that I should light up your lines.
Okay.
What if the people out there screaming and breaking up the discussion at the town meeting are correct? What if we have a situation in which you have secret meetings being held by the president, the absolute fascist nightmare, because fascism is defined as government combining with corporate powers to impose their profit-making regime on you?
Well, how about that? How about that for a comment from a progressive leftist saying, what if they're right? And who's he talking about? He's talking about the brown-shirted fascists who are disrupting those town meetings. He's talking about the people he's been conditioned to hate. That's who he's talking about. He's right over on the far left of the political spectrum. And he's saying, hey, what if those people who are painted to me as being on the far right of the political spectrum are right? There is, folks, a historic opportunity and a vital opportunity to be taken for people in the United States to start to transcend the artificial whipped up hysteria of the current moment. And you better watch that hysteria very carefully. As I say, watch anybody who's trying to get you mad, right? Whether it's Alex Jones or whether it's Sean Hannity or whoever it is who's trying to get you mad, and start thinking there is a historic opportunity for certain groups of Americans to come together. And I'm going to point out who they are across the political spectrum. Let's start on the very far right of the political spectrum in the Patriot Movement. Now, they're already on board. The Patriot Movement have known what's going down with the New World Order ever since the days of Waco and Oklahoma, have been well aware of the plans of the New World Order. So they are already switched on. They know Washington, D.C. is the enemy. They know that international globalism, run by the vested interests of globalization, are their enemy. So they're switched on already. Moving then to the next grouping, the Sarah Palinites. Let me just, you know, lump them all in there. And this is people within the Republican Party who have yet to catch on that they're being suckered into a down market move, that they've been suckered into Sarah Palinism, which is trite and trivial. And as long as they are hating the liberals, you can forget about them. So paint them out of your grand coalition of Americans to resist what's going on. Move then towards the center, especially the Republicans who value the original ideals before George Bush destroyed the small government impetus of the Republican Party. Those people, they're clued in. They know Washington is the enemy. Also, you've got a lot of people who are centrist in outlook and libertarian in outlook. And they're not attached to the duopoly, Republican-Democrat duopoly, which has been created. Moving over then into those who voted for Barack Obama and now wish they didn't. They can go to I'msorryivotedforobama.com. I'm not kidding. As a couple of thousand people have already signed up there explaining how they are sorry. And those kind of people, they've already caught on to what's going down. They know the betrayal and they no longer have an attachment. And they know that Washington is the enemy. Now start moving into the left. And these are the brainwashed sheep on the left, the equivalent of the Palinites. And they're well trained by Jon Stewart, et al., to laugh, and Keith Olbermann, etc., etc., to laugh at the right. Yeah, keep laughing, folks. You're like Pavlov's dogs. Conditioned responses. And you salivate every time Jon Stewart comes on and divides and conquers America on behalf of the New World Order. So you can forget about them. And then move over to the real progressives who've got a brain. And as you heard with that caller, they're figuring it out. So put all of that together against the backdrop of the bailout, which switched so many Americans on to how they're being screwed over. And you have, I've outlined there, six different shades of political opinion. And of the six, four of them are wide open to taking a new look at what's going down in the United States. And they need to. They need to remember that phrase, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they need to start figuring out who their friends are pretty quick. They need to stop playing the politics of divide and conquer, which will divide and conquer the people of the United States. And they need to start building coalitions against the common enemy. Remember that one of the prime purposes of the current divisive health debate, hard on the heels of public outrage over the bailout, is to ensure that the people of the United States do not come together in outrage at what's been done to the nation and defeat those who are doing it. Remember, this is a project of destabilization, and emotion is the enemy. This economic so-called collapse is completely orchestrated. A bubble economy which began back in the 80s gathered momentum through the stock market crash of 87, kept that momentum going all the way through the Clinton era, kept that momentum going all the way through the Bush era. A vast bubble designed to create a wave of dollars which would fund and be the oil for the engine of globalization, taking things so far, and then the plug is pulled. The inevitable crash, part of the calculation, which sucked people in the United States in, like marks in a con game during the bubble times, has now manifested itself, and as Yuri Bezmenov says, it is complete and total war. And so, if you're on the left, or if you're on the right, you need to go to people who are in the opposing camp, especially those who can think straight. And you need to say, dude, you and I probably disagree on quite a few things. But one thing we agree on is we're being fucked over. And this country's being destroyed. So let's forget what we disagree about and unite on what we agree about, and let's stop it. Afterwards, we can sit down and have a civil debate about our political differences. But right now, job one is to unite and stop this. It's going to require discipline, and it's also going to require nerves of steel, because destabilization is the game, whipping up emotion is part of that, and all sorts of things may be thrown at you in order to whip those emotions up. Remember, the final objective is to sucker the left into the establishment of a totalitarian, China-style communal capitalism, which is a leftist structure. That's the final agenda. So all sorts of stuff will be thrown at you to get to that destination. And if I was Barack Obama, I'd wear a bulletproof vest. Okay, that's it for this edition. I'll be back very shortly with more, and I hope you can join me for that. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fenton Dunn reporting.
Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from harm. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.